This is a podcast from the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, a nonpartisan research institute that explores budget policies and issues affecting low and moderate income Americans. I'm Michelle Bazzi, and welcome to this policy briefing.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. Today, the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities is releasing a major report on the federal budget outlook through 2050. With me is Richard Kogan, a senior fellow here at the Center and well-known budget expert, and a principal author of the report, whom I'll turn to in a minute to discuss the key findings. We issued a similar report in January 2007. Today's new report updates that, and it reflects the effects of a number of recent developments, a major recession, an expected large stimulus package in the next few months, and bailouts and related financial rescues. It is, to the best of our knowledge, the first assessment of the nation's long-term fiscal situation to reflect these recent developments. Three key conclusions emerge. First, as earlier analyses have found, the nation's long-term fiscal situation is unsustainable, with this unsustainable situation being driven by three key factors: swiftly rising health care costs, the aging of the population, and an eroding federal revenue base. Second, our current economic and financial market problems and measures to respond to them, that is to say, the recession, a coming stimulus package, the bailouts, and the like, have only a very small effect on the long-term fiscal problem, because while they're costly in the short term, those are temporary costs, while the three main drivers that I just referred to that drive the long-term problem are ongoing factors that will be with us for a very long period. And third, the long-term fiscal problem is so large that both taxes and programs will need to be on the table when serious conversations about long-term deficit reduction begins. I should note that in issuing today's analysis, we're not suggesting that the long-term problem, serious as it is, should take precedence over immediate steps to stabilize financial markets and the economy. Such immediate steps, even if deficits exceed $1 trillion this year and next, are essential to help avert a deep and prolonged recession. And in any event, as I just noted, they really will not have a big effect on the long-term problem. But policymakers should keep the long-term budget problem in mind as they take these necessary steps to stabilize markets and the economy. While the long-term problem should not deter policymakers from dealing quickly with the short-term crisis, policymakers will need to demonstrate to the public and to lenders who finance our borrowing that they're prepared to move the budget toward a sustainable long-term path when the economy improves. Here now to go over the key findings in the report, Richard Kogan.
Thank you, Bob. I intend to answer four questions about the long-term budget problem. How large is it? What causes it? Outside of Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security, what role do other programs play? And what is the effect of the current recession, bailouts, and economic recovery efforts? Okay, first, how big is the fiscal problem? A nation's budget is sustainable if it can avoid a long-term debt explosion. Debt explodes when it grows faster than the economy for a long period, just as a family's debt explodes if its credit card debt grows faster than its income. No nation can afford a long-term debt explosion. If debt explodes, eventually interest rates permanently explode, or the nation must sell its assets to foreigners, or some combination. Either way, standards of living would eventually reverse their two-century rise and start falling. So the key is for the U.S. to stabilize its ratio of debt to gross domestic product, or GDP. Unfortunately, our projections show the opposite. They show that if the nation remains on its current budget course, the debt would rise from its expected level of 46% of GDP at the end of 2009 to 279% of GDP, 279% by 2050. Such a level would be 2.5 times the highest previous record reached at the end of World War II. It would be very harmful to the economy. By the way, when we talk about the current budget course, as I just did, we are talking about continuing current budget and tax policies. This includes projecting what would happen if tax cuts that are scheduled to expire instead continue indefinitely, and if relief from the alternative minimum tax and from the scheduled cuts in reimbursements to Medicare physicians also continue in all future years. Please note, we are not predicting that the debt will actually reach 279% of GDP in 2050. Rather, we make our projections to quantify how much deficit reduction is needed to stabilize the debt-to-GDP ratio. What would it take to eliminate a debt explosion so that debt in 2050 would be 46% of GDP, the same as its current level? The answer is that to close this so-called fiscal gap, we would have to raise all taxes by an average of 24% over the period from 2010 to 2050, or cut all government programs by an average of 20%, or some combination of the two. Just to remind you, the phrase all government programs includes Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, defense, education, transportation, veterans benefits, and law enforcement. These tax increases and program cuts would average 4.2% of GDP over the period. You will notice that I said average. If we do less deficit reduction than 4.2% of GDP up front, we will have to do even more at the back end. And because upfront savings would generate 4 decades of compound interest savings, there is a great premium on early action. Unfortunately, as Bob just explained, the economy can't possibly afford immediate deficit reduction. That would just kick the economy when it's down. So you can see we face a large challenge. Second, the causes of the fiscal gap. The 3 main causes of the fiscal gap of 4.2% of GDP are rising cost of public and private health care, the aging of the population, and the tax cuts enacted in 2001 and 2003. Healthcare cost growth accounts for 3/4 of the long-term fiscal gap. To put this another way, if by some miracle the cost of Medicare, Medicaid, and private sector health expenditures did not grow any faster than the growth of the economy, the fiscal gap would be reduced by 3/4. The rapid growth of healthcare costs over past decades is familiar to anyone who pays health insurance premiums, and CBO projects it will continue at almost that pace through 2050. You'll notice that I include the private sector healthcare cost growth as a major source of the fiscal gap. Why is that? Well, one reason is that public and private sector costs grow at a very similar rate over long periods of time, as makes sense since both the public and private sector deliver the same sorts of medical care to similar populations and are subject to the same upward cost pressures from medical innovation. Another reason is that the government subsidizes almost all private health insurance by subtracting most health insurance premiums from your income when calculating income tax and payroll tax liability. The growing size of these tax subsidies is one reason that tax revenues are projected to fall from 20.9% of GDP in 2000 to 17.2% of GDP in 2050. Because of the link between public and private health insurance, and because of these tax subsidies, we and many other analysts believe the nation cannot get a handle on the long-term budget problem without reforming the entire healthcare sector. Now let's talk about the aging of the population. This adds to the growth in the cost of healthcare I just discussed, but is much less significant. We can see this by looking at Social Security. Through 2050, Social Security's spending growth is only half as significant as the growth of Medicare and Medicaid. Also note that the average per-person Social Security benefit does not grow faster than the economy. The growth in Social Security is entirely due to aging. Finally, tax cuts. Extending the Bush tax cuts and extending AMT relief to prevent the tax cuts from being clawed back would together cost 2% of GDP. As you can see, this is nearly half of the 4.2% fiscal gap. Third, let me go into the role of other government programs. I have described the Bush tax cuts and the rapidly growing cost of health care and the aging of the population as the main drivers of the long-term fiscal gap. Together, they account for more than the entire problem. This means that, taken as a whole, other programs are not contributing to the problem. In fact, their overall restrained growth helps to ameliorate the long-term problem. Outside of the big three programs of Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security, other programs, including other entitlement programs, are projected to decline as a share of the economy. Thus, the common pronouncement that there is an entitlement crisis is not useful shorthand, but rather fundamentally misleading. And any discussion of, say, congressional earmarks costing perhaps 0.1% of GDP is, in budgetary terms, just a digression. Finally, and fourth, the current recession. It is important to distinguish temporary costs from permanent costs. We include more than $1.4 trillion of temporary costs in our projection, covering the fiscal bailouts, a major future economic recovery bill, and the automatic revenue losses and automatic increases in unemployment compensation and other programs because of the deep recession. $1.4 trillion is by no means a trivial figure. Yet, because these costs are temporary, they contribute less than 0.2% of GDP to the long-term fiscal gap. This reinforces Bob's point that it would be profoundly foolish to fail to rescue the economy or even to scrimp on needed recovery efforts because of a concern about the long-term debt, even though the long-term problem is very real. Thank you. This concludes the summary of our analysis.
Thank you for listening to this policy briefing from the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. You can follow us on Twitter at Center on Budget, find us on Facebook, or create a My Center account at centeronbudget.org.